I'd like to turn to the book of 2 Corinthians, chapter 4. 2 Corinthians, chapter 4. We'll read verse 17 through the 8th verse of chapter 5. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, while we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. For we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this, that is, this tabernacle, we groan earnestly, desiring to be clothed upon with our house which is from heaven. If so be that being clothed we shall not be found naked. For we that are in this tabernacle do groan, being burdened, not for that we should be unclothed, but clothed upon, that mortality might be swallowed up of life. Now he that hath wrought us for the selfsame thing is God, who also hath given unto us the earnest of the Spirit. Therefore, because of the earnest of the Spirit, we are always confident, knowing that while we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord. For we walk by faith, not by sight. We are confident, I say, and willing, rather to be absent from the body, and to be present with the Lord. In the verses preceding what we just read, Paul spoke of the earthly life. He said in verse 1, "We faint not," which means that he possessed a courageous endurance, which of course implies the presence of difficulty. The very words, "we faint not," imply the presence of difficulty and hardship. Verse 4, he mentioned the working of Satan, which we deal with, of course, in these earthly lives. In verses 8 and 9, he speaks of being troubled, that is, pressed on every side, being perplexed, being persecuted, being cast down. In verse 10, he spoke of bearing in the body the dying of the Lord Jesus. In verse 11, he spoke the fact that he was always delivered unto death for Jesus' sake. He then again states in verse 16, "We faint not." So this gives us a picture of the earthly life of Paul and also our own earthly life. As Paul writes these words, he speaks as a man whose earthly mortality was becoming more and more evident. And if you live long enough, you too will get to that point where you realize that mortality, that your own mortality becomes more and more evident. He said in verse 12, "So then death worketh in us." In other words, the presence of death was always there. And then in chapter 5 in verse 1, he said, "If our earthly house of this tabernacle," speaking of our human bodies, "were dissolved." So he realized the possibility. He was very aware that this earthly house could be dissolved, could be destroyed. He not only speaks as a man whose earthly mortality was becoming more and more evident. He speaks as a man who is becoming weaker physically, and yet spiritually stronger. We see that in verse 16 of chapter 4. He says, though our outward man perish. Again, he felt that the outward man was in a state of decay. So he's becoming physically weaker. But he says the inward man, that's the spiritual part of us, he said, is being renewed day by day. So he's a man who is becoming weaker physically and yet spiritually stronger. How sad it is for someone to become physically weaker and at the same time spiritually weaker. As we become physically weaker due to our own mortality, we ought to be becoming spiritually stronger each and every day. He then comes to the realization that all these sufferings that he has mentioned, they are temporal. They're all temporal. They're all going to pass away. He comes to the realization that there is so much more than the temporal for the child of God. And as you get older in age, and as you get older in the Lord, hopefully you come to the realization that the spiritual is so much more important, and that there's something far, far better for the child of God other than the temporal. He spoke of this in verse 17. He says that there is a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, talking about the blessings of heaven. This is what Paul speaks of in Romans chapter 8, in verse 18, when he said, for I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. After speaking in verse 17 of 2 Corinthians 4 of our text upon eternal glory, he testifies to the fact that he has set his attention not upon the temporal, but upon the eternal. And not only does Paul speak of this earthly life, but he also speaks of his personal assurance and his personal confidence of this eternal glory. We see that in 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 1. Heaven was a reality to Paul. And Paul was absolutely certain. There was no doubt in his mind that that is where he was headed, that he was heaven bound. This is referred to, not by Paul, but it is referred to in 1 Peter 1 and verse 4, that is, that heaven is certain. We have an inheritance. It's incorruptible, it's undefiled, it fadeth not away, reserved in heaven for you. And as one gets, again, older in the Lord, hopefully this becomes more and more of a reality every single day, that we are heaven bound. The reason we are heaven bound is because of the grace of God. One day soon, the child of God is going to, either in the rapture or at the time of death, is going to hear those words that we read in Song of Solomon 2 in verse 10, rise up and come away. And what John heard in Revelation 4 and verse 1, come up hither. And upon hearing those words, we will be carried into a place called heaven. He spoke this morning on a place called hell. We like to speak this night on a place called heaven. Heaven is a real place. Most people do not have any trouble believing that heaven is a real place. They have a lot of trouble believing that hell
is a real place. But one is just as real as the other. We saw that hell is a real place where real people go. And heaven is a real place where real people go. All through the Bible, hell is spoken of as a real place. All through the Bible, heaven is spoken of as a real place. Heaven is not merely the air. Heaven is a place. Heaven is not merely a state of being. It is a location. It is a real place. Heaven is not a fable. Heaven is not a dream. It's not the product of human imagination. It's a real place. It's a literal place. We see that God the Father is in heaven. God dwells in heaven. Now we know that God is everywhere, but the Bible specifically tells us that the Father is in heaven. Matthew 5 and verse 48, your Father, which is in heaven. Matthew 6 and verse 9, our Father, which art in heaven. So again, heaven is a real place. We read in John chapter 3 and verse 13 concerning Christ that he came down from heaven. And then it goes on to say, even the Son of Man, which is in heaven. He came down from heaven and he is in heaven. In John chapter 6 and verse 38, Jesus said, for I am come down from heaven. It's a place. 1 Corinthians 15 and 47, the second man, Jesus Christ, is the Lord from heaven. So heaven is a place. We read in Acts chapter 1 and verse 11 that Jesus ascended into heaven. We read in Acts 7 verse 55, when Stephen was being stoned to death, that he looked up steadfastly into heaven. And it was there that he saw the glory of God and Jesus standing on the right hand of God. In Revelation 21 and verse 2, we read the phrase, out of heaven. So again, over and over and over, we are reminded that heaven is a place. Heaven is a locality. Heaven is a reality. In our text, there in chapter 5 and verse 1 of 2 Corinthians, Paul refers to a building of God. A building must have a location. He refers to a house. A house must have a location. Now this building in this house is different than any building and house that you and I know of in this earth. Because this building and house was not made with hands. But it does have a location. And he goes on to tell us where it is. Eternal in the heavens. We have a building. We have a house. Not made with hands. And this building and house is eternal in the heavens. The Bible refers to heaven as a country. Hebrews 11 and verse 16. Now they desire a better country. Again, a country must have a location. And he goes on to say they desire a better country that is a heavenly country. Paul, or heaven is referred to as a city. In Hebrews 11 verse 16. And in Hebrews 13 and verse 14. So heaven is a place. Jesus speaks of heaven as a prepared kingdom. A kingdom must have a place. We see and notice in Matthew 25. Matthew chapter 25. And verse 34. Matthew 25. Verse 34. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Heaven is a kingdom prepared by God, not built with hands, but prepared by God for a special people from before the foundation of the world. Jesus said in John 14 and verse 2, I go to prepare a place for you. Now, strictly in the context, Jesus is speaking to his church, and I believe he's speaking of the New Jerusalem, a special place for his bride. But the application is that heaven is a prepared place for a prepared people. We also see that heaven as a place is in sharp contrast to everything in the earth. It is in sharp contrast to all that is earthly. The earth is a place. The earth, of course, is real. But the earth is unstable. The earth is insecure. Everything in the earth is unstable. Everything in the earth is insecure. Everything in the earth is fleeting. On the other hand, heaven is also a place, but very much unlike the earth. Heaven is stable. It is secure. It is eternal. We read in Hebrews 13 and verse 14, for here, that is on earth, we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. Speaking of heaven. Earth is very unsafe. Matthew chapter 6, verse 19, we are instructed not to lay up ourselves treasures upon earth. Because on earth there is moth that will destroy treasures. There is rust. There are thieves. Earth is a place where treasures are lost. But notice verse 20. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Again, heaven is a place. Because in heaven there is no moth, there is no rust, there is no corruption, there is no thieves. It's just the opposite of the earth. You see, thieves are here on earth. Treasures are lost on earth. Moths and rust are here on earth. But not in heaven. They are complete opposites. Now, heaven is a place, has a place, is just as real as earth. But heaven is a place of absolute certainty. It is a place beyond imagination. You and I perhaps like to think about heaven. But the truth is, you and I cannot even begin to imagine heaven. We really have, it's incomparable. There's nothing here on earth that you can compare it to. And yet so many songwriters especially, try to make heaven like earth. Why would you want to do that? I'm looking forward to getting out of this place. But many songwriters today, they want to make heaven like earth. But heaven is nothing like earth. Nothing. So many modern song leaders, again, try to bring earthly feelings and earthly ties in heaven. The songs, Wish You Were Here, I'm sorry, that's not so. It might make you feel good to think that your loved ones are wishing for you to be there, but that's just not so. That's earth. That's not heaven. They're not looking down. They're not sharing in your sorrows. That's not heaven. That's earth. Well, when we get to heaven, will we be married? When we get to heaven, will we know each other? Those things aren't important in heaven. That's earth. I do believe that perhaps we will recognize one another, but it won't matter. It won't matter. None of that will matter. That's all earth. We need to quit trying to make heaven like earth, because it's nothing like it. Heaven is a place of joy. The joy of heaven is a joy that you have never experienced. It is a joy that we cannot experience on earth, because you need a glorified body to experience this joy. You couldn't handle it in a physical body. It is a joy that none of us have ever felt. It is a joy that is beyond human imagination. It is a joy that is incomparable. In the parable of the talents, Matthew 25, it is twice stated in verse 21 and in verse 23. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. The very moment we step into the glory of heaven, we will experience a joy that we have never experienced before. We will experience a joy that is incomparable. You say, well, what about the joy of salvation? You and I do not fully understand salvation. There we will. We have not felt the joy that we will feel in heaven. So why would anyone want to try and diminish that joy in their theology or in their songwriting? It's beyond me. The very moment we step into the glory of heaven, we have never-ending joy. Now in these earthly lives, God in His goodness gives us enjoyments. Many things on the earth that God has put here for our enjoyment. That is the goodness of the Lord. And as children of God, we have special times of enjoyment, and we have some enjoyments that the world knows nothing about. But in these lives, all of our enjoyments, it is always so that at any time, something can mar it. Something can happen to diminish our joy. But in heaven, there is a kind of joy and a degree of joy. There is a kind of thrill and degree of thrill and exuberance and a delight that you can only know in heaven. You cannot know it anywhere else. It's only in heaven. And there is absolutely nothing that can interrupt the joy of heaven. Again, your loved ones are not looking down and sharing your sorrow. That would be interrupted joy. In heaven, we have uninterrupted joy. We have perfect joy. We've never experienced perfect joy. Oh, we've been happy. And we've had joy. And we rejoice. But none of us have ever experienced perfect joy. That's only in heaven. Heaven is a place of joy. It is a joy so great, so magnificent, and so complete. Again, you'll need a glorified body to stand it. Let's consider some of the joys of heaven. Again, they're all uninterrupted. They're all perfect. They're complete. They're full. They're forever. There will be the joy of seeing Jesus Christ. People talk about the streets of gold, the pearly gates, seen mom and dad and grandma and grandpa. That's not what it's about. In heaven, we will see Jesus Christ. Now you think about it, speaking of God's people, here in this life, you and I have caught glimpses of Jesus Christ. We catch these glimpses of Christ by faith. And it is those glimpses of Christ. We know when we catch a glimpse of Christ by faith, it gives us joy in this life. And sometimes it's a joy that you just can't understand it. It's like being caught up in the third heaven that Paul talked about. It is these glimpses of Christ by faith that we find encouragement. And we find the peace that passes understanding. Those are all glorious times. But there's coming a day. There's coming a day when faith will no longer be needed. There's coming a day when faith shall give way to sight. And it'll be perfect sight. And it will be complete sight. We read in 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 12, "For now, presently, we see through a glass darkly," very vaguely, "but then," and oh, what a difference between now and then. Now we see in a glass darkly, but then face to face. Not by faith, but by sight. We read in 1 John 3 and verse 2, "We shall see him as he is." We shall see him as he is. Many times on earth we see him as we imagine him. But in heaven we shall see him as he is. Job 19, verse 26 and 27, Job said, "Though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I personally see God." He goes on to say, "Whom I shall see for myself." No one else is going to see him for me and tell me what they saw. I will see him for myself. And then he went on a little further. And he said, "And mine eyes shall behold." This is not just a passing gaze. We shall see him as he is, and our eyes shall behold. We will be fixated upon Jesus Christ. In Isaiah 33, in verse 17, we read, "Thine eyes shall see the King in his beauty." Such can only be experienced in heaven. Here we experience it by faith. We do not experience these things by sight. We experience them by faith. But in heaven, we shall experience these things by sight. Can you even begin to imagine the joy of seeing him? It is incomparable. Just as the agony of he lift up his eyes in hell. You can't imagine that. You cannot imagine stepping out of these bodies of corruption. Stepping out of these bodies of disease. Stepping out of this world. And stepping into heaven and seeing him in all of his beauty. Just as he is. in all of His glory. You cannot imagine the joy. Jesus prayed for this. He prayed there in John 17 and 24, "Father, I will they also, whom Thou hast given me, be with me where I am, that they may behold my glory." Lord, all those You've given me, that one day they'll be with me where I am, that they may behold. Again, this isn't just a passing gaze. That they may behold my glory. For all eternity, beholding Jesus in His glory. For the child of God, we look forward to the day when we hear the Lord say, "Come away." We look forward to the day when the Lord says, "Come up hither." Looking forward to the day where we'll be carried out of these bodies into the very presence of the Lord, and then we shall see Him face to face. I'm telling you, those that are in heaven are not missing a thing upon this earth. We shall see Him. And there will be nothing to mar our vision. There will be nothing to block our vision. There will be nothing to hinder our sight. There will be an uninterrupted beholding of Jesus Christ. Also, there will be the enjoyment of the Lord. As we walk through this world, our circumstances, of course, are many and varied. And we do experience joy when we feel the very presence of the Lord. When we walk through this life and we experience the presence of the One who walked with Enoch, that brings us joy. When we walk with the One who rode with Noah in the ark, and the One who watched over Moses in the bulrushes, and the One who opened the Red Sea. When we feel His presence, there's joy. We've all that are saved have experienced that from time to time. There are times in this life of enjoying the Lord. But in every single one of those times, there is always something in the way. Always. Our own flesh keeps us from fully enjoying the Lord. There is always something in the way. Oh, we've had enjoyments. We've had the enjoyment of the Lord. But there's always been something to keep it from being complete. We read in 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 8 that heaven is to be present with the Lord. Not only will we see Christ, we will fully enjoy the presence of God. The only place that you can have full enjoyment of Christ is in heaven. And again, it's going to require a glorified body. There will be nothing in the way. There will be nothing that can enter heaven that will get in the way of this joy. There will be the joy of knowledge. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 13:12, "Now I know in part." And what we know about God brings us joy. But whatever you know tonight, whatever it is, no matter how studied you are in a particular doctrine, you only know a part of it. You only know a very little part of it. But Paul went on to say, "But then, But then shall I know, even as also I am known. That too will be joy unimaginable. There will be the enjoyment of seeing the beauties of heaven. The main attraction all through the book of Revelation is Jesus Christ. But heaven is a beautiful place. There isn't anything like it. There isn't anything on this earth. You can go to the most beautiful place on this earth, and it doesn't even compare to heaven. The Lord has given us many beautiful things to look upon in this life. Most of them we are oblivious to and take for granted. But heaven is unparalleled in beauty. In this life we get glimpses of the glory of God. Everywhere you go in heaven, there's the glory of God. And there is nothing to diminish it. Everything in heaven, everything about heaven, is incomparably beautiful. There is not one single spot of defilement anywhere in heaven. Not one single thing to diminish the absolute beauty of heaven. The joy will be unimaginable. There will be the joy of complete victory. In this life, of course, we have trials, we have sorrows, we have difficulties, there are storms, there are troubles, etc. We're constantly battling the flesh. We're constantly battling our own sin. We're constantly battling our own feelings. We're constantly battling our own attitudes. We're constantly battling our own thinking and also the thinking of others and the thinking of the world. But one day, we're going to cross over into a perfect and complete victory without any defeat. Notice in Revelation chapter 21, Revelation 21 and verse 4. God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. There shall be no more death, neither sorrow. There is no death in heaven. There is no sorrow in heaven, nor crying. Neither shall there be any more pain. For the former things, speaking of earth, they're all gone. They're gone. They're forever gone. Never to return. In heaven, there will be no influence of Satan. Nowhere in heaven will you find the hindrance of Satan. Nowhere in heaven will you find Satan's traps and his devices and his tricks. In these earthly lives, we put up with them all the time. We're constantly on the lookout, or you ought to be, for the devil's traps and his devices and his tricks. No more Satan. In heaven, there will be no more sin. All the filthiness of sin will be gone. All the vileness of sin will be gone. All the abomination of sin will be gone. All the blasphemy, all the degradation, all the ungodliness of sin, forever gone. You and I have no idea what that's like. Because every single moment of our lives, we have been dogged by sin. Everywhere we turn, there is sin. We have never had a second when there has not been the influence of Satan and sin. But in heaven, these things will be forever gone. This is perfect victory. 1 Corinthians 15, verses 42 through 44. we learn that corruption will be swallowed up with incorruption. That dishonor will be swallowed up with glory. And that weakness will be swallowed up with power. And that which is natural will be swallowed up with that which is spiritual. That is complete victory. There will be the unimaginable joy of complete victory. You see, heaven is perfect blessing without any trace of the curse. Everywhere you and I go in this life, we deal with the curse of God upon this world. There will also be the joy of perfect worship. We see this in Revelation 4, chapter 5, chapter 7, chapter 15, chapter 19. In this earthly life, you and I that are saved, God gives us a desire to worship God. And in our earthly life, we have experienced some wonderful times of worship. But we have never, not one single time, have we ever worshiped God like we ought. Never. There's always something. Our own flesh, our own physical bodies get in the way of worship. Our physical bodies get tired. That gets in the way. Doesn't mean that getting tired is a sin. It's an infirmity. And it's an infirmity that gets in the way of worship. In this life, there are always hindrances to the worship of God. In this life, we've never fully seen and realized and feel and felt what we ought to in worshiping God. But in heaven, we're going to fully realize His majesty. You and I cannot even comprehend that. We are also going to realize His grace, His mercy, His love, His kindness. And fully realizing His majesty and glory, and fully realizing the grace and mercy and love and kindness that He has bestowed upon us, that's unimaginable joy. And we will worship. Can you imagine the joy of hearing perfect praise? You and I know the joy that we experience when a church building is full and everybody's singing. It's a joy. But can you even begin to imagine the joy of hearing perfect praise of an innumerable multitude? Perfect thanksgiving. Heaven is a real place. Heaven is a place of joy. All that being said, there ought to be an inward longing in the heart of every child of God for heaven. Heaven is not something to dread. Heaven is a wonderful place, an incomparable place. Nothing like this earth. Everything about heaven is gain. Paul said in Philippians 1 and verse 21, "For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain." That's true of every child of God. You lose nothing by going to heaven. Nothing. The thought of leaving everything behind to the lost man is a dreadful thought. But to the child of God, it's glorious. because everything is gain. We lose nothing. Everything about heaven is far better than anything in this life. A lot of good things in this life. A lot of things that we enjoy. But everything in heaven is far better. Philippians 1 and verse 23, to be with Christ, which is far better. No one in heaven misses a thing. In our text in chapter 5, in verse 5, it is stated that we have been given the earnest of the Spirit, the down payment of the Spirit of God. The Spirit of God dwells within the heart of the believer. And in so doing, He creates a desire. He creates a thirst. He creates a longing for heaven. The longer we live in this sinful earth, we become more and more of a stranger, more and more of an alien in this life each and every day. And we long. We long for heaven. We saw again that Paul was at the point in his life where his mortality was becoming more and more and more evident. And he was growing weaker and weaker physically, but he was also growing stronger spiritually. And that gave him a desire for heaven. Notice in verse 2 of chapter 5, he said, "For in this we groan earnestly desiring to be clothed upon with our house, which is from heaven." Verse 4, "For we that are in this tabernacle," these earthly bodies, "do groan, being burdened, not that we should be unclothed, but clothed upon that mortality might be swallowed up of life." He's talking about heaven. Verse 8, "We are confident, I say, and willing, rather to be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord." You see, in this life we are pilgrims and strangers. The further we go in this life, the more we realize that is true. We are pilgrims. We are strangers. We have a home. Heaven is our home. And the very thought of home creates a desire in our hearts. Home is like a magnet that draws us. Heaven is our home. And our hearts ought to be drawn to heaven. The thought of heaven, the hope of heaven, the fact of heaven ought to thrill our soul and ought to loose our moorings upon this earth. Make no mistake about it. Heaven is a real place. It's home. For the child of God, it's home. It's not only to be realized as home when we get there. It is to be realized as home all the way through this life. We are to realize, this is not my home. I am not going to get too attached here. This is not my home. This is the problem with many of God's people today. They have become far too attached to this world. So much so that if they were honest, they dread leaving this world. They're afraid they're going to lose. They're going to come up on the short end. We should never get so attached to this earth that it becomes our home. Heaven is home. Paul said in Philippians 3 and verse 20, our conversation is in heaven. That is, our citizenship is in heaven. That's home. And all because of the grace of God in saving our souls, one day, we're going home. And we will be there forever. Nothing about it will be interrupted. All the joy of going home. We miss dearly saints of God that have gone on. There is not a day that goes by that I do not think of many that have gone on. And we miss them. But all the joy that they have. And we cannot possibly be sad for them. We are sad because we might miss them, but we are not sad for them. We may weep because we miss them, but we do not weep for them. Because they're home. And one day, the truth is, we ought to envy those who've gone on. Our attitude ought to be, oh, I wish that could have been me. But I have a little longer to go. But one day, we're going home. We've all been to many funerals. And there isn't anything that thrills me more than walking out of a cemetery and knowing in my heart that they're home with the Lord. What a joy. We have a home. And this earth isn't it. Don't get too attached to this earth. But set your affections on things above in heaven. One day, all because of the grace of God, we're going home. And all the joy that will be ours forever. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us.